Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl, and I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together, this is...
Me! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Hey, Jay, doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing A-okay. Did you have anything good to drink this week?
Well, as a matter of fact, I did. We went with the grandkids to go to Disney, so we had a couple of opportunities there. Had their espresso martini our first night at dinner.
Nice.
And as a follow-up to that, I ordered their pina colada because it looked so good. So I got one of those, and it was good, too.
Mickey Mouse knows how to make a good pina colada?
What's that?
Mickey Mouse knows how to make a good pina colada?
Yeah, yeah. Right, Mickey Mouse. Mickey. The mouse had him in his house.
Nice.
And then the first morning we went to Magic Kingdom. Well, Magic Kingdom, they kind of lock you down.
Yeah.
You can drink some at a restaurant, but you can't carry them around or anything, you know?
Yeah, they keep it real secret where the booze is.
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of controlled, and they don't come back to your table very often, so you can't really get too many. So that there wasn't much on Magic Kingdom Day, but now the second day was Hollywood Studios. And Hollywood Studios is very free with the booze, and they've got bar stands set up all over the place.
Yeah, I remember that.
So I went looking for coffee, because we get there in the morning about 9:30. So I went looking for a coffee with some booze in it, and the line was so long for it, I gave up when I found a market area that was serving pina coladas.
You were having a pina colada kind of trip.
I had pina colada breakfast drink. That's what I started calling them, my breakfast pina colada. And I ended up having about three or four of those before we even made it to lunch. So,
well,
that was a good day to start off with those. So, but they made a very good creamy pina colada, and you know, a lot of times you get at those kind of places, and it's just like drinking a milkshake or something. You know, you wonder whether there's really any alcohol in it or not. But boy, I tell you what, you better stir these up real good because they had alcohol in them.
Wow.
So it was pretty good.
But, heck of a breakfast.
On that first night there at the dinner, they had the characters that come around to the table. So, of course, Charlie and Cooper were going crazy every time one of them would come over. And Cooper made me, when Donald Duck came over, Cooper came over and said, "Pop, pop, do your Donald Duck, do your Donald Duck." So I had to do my Donald Duck to Donald Duck. Donald Duck looked at me like, "What do you want me to do with this?" And what do you say? I don't know. And then give you a
thumbs up at least.
Yeah, he did. He did give me a thumbs up. And then Cooper said, "Now do your Goofy." And I'm like, "You want me to do my Goofy to Donald Duck?" Yes.
You're getting professional opinions here. That's important.
So I did my Goofy, and Donald looked at me then and just did this mind blown motion. It's like, what, buddy, what do you want? You want me to bring you a free drink or something? I mean, what is this supposed to be?
Are you applying for a job right now? This is the interview.
I said, Donald thinks I'm auditioning and that he's the guy that's going to put in a good word for me or something.
I'll have you know, Donald Duck himself said I excel at this.
So. Yeah.
No, good for you.
Well, how about you? Did you come across any good drinks, or were you working too much?
Oh man, I was working. It was a slow week, but did I have anything of interest? I did my traditional Thanksgiving half marathon by myself. That's what I do.
Well, you probably didn't drink while you ran that.
No, no, but I did get, I got a bottle of bubbles to have like a, usually afterwards I'll make myself some waffles and I'll have like some mimosas or whatever as like my Thanksgiving brunch to reward myself for running 13 miles. But honestly, I was just so like it always sounds like a better idea than it is because the last thing you want to do after coming home from a long run is cook or honestly drink. So yeah. I had a little bit of a grapefruit mimosa and I eventually took a nap and then I made my pancakes or my waffles, but not a lot of drink making, not too much drink having.
Heavy exercise and alcohol to me have never gone together.
I mean, they're great when you want to like get a nice buzz off of a single drink and go to bed.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of like I went to a Friendsgiving a little later in the day and I had some food and a glass of wine. And then I was like, great. All right. I'm going to bed. It's 9 o'clock. I'm going to go to sleep. And I did.
When I was in college, we used to go give blood and then go to happy hour because you could get drunk there on just a couple dollars.
You know, that doesn't sound like a great idea, but I have to say, even at like my blood donation center that I use here in New York, it's like 1 month out of the year that they do this, like this pints for pints where you get like vouchers for free beers at different bars around the different breweries around New York. If you donate blood, and I'm like, this doesn't feel like a good combo, but it is the one event that gets me to, you know, habitually donate blood. Like,
always tell you drink plenty of fluids after you give blood. So
yeah, well, alcohol doesn't count. Do not drink excessive alcohol after running long distances or giving blood or any time around operating machinery. I don't know. Just general. Don't do anything we talk about.
But I like, you know, they show commercials sometimes, these guys out playing basketball outside in this heat and everything. And then they sit down and crack open a beer and drink a beer. That's the last thing I would want to drink back in my basketball playing days. Man, give me a Gatorade. I don't want a beer after I've been out there running around sweating in the sun and everything.
I don't know. I think I disagree with that depending on the beer. I don't want a nice beer when I'm sweaty and exhausted, but like a shitty beer.
Yeah.
Like a Tecate or a Budweiser.
PBR.
For me, it's like furniture building beer. That's what I think about. Like after I have like sweated in like an apartment, like building some shelves or a desk, like I, this is exactly what I want is this beer. But I will say like sometimes even like after like a day of being outside exercising, you know, being hot, being sweaty, a cold, shitty beer is the most refreshing thing. And I even know some crazy runners that recommend, like, no, that's what they do before a long run. They drink a low ABV Pilsner because you get some carbs, you get some immediate energy, you get a little pep because you got a little bit of a buzz, and you just gets you through.
I couldn't do that.
Again, not advocating for any of this.
Advocating? Well, that's a good segue.
Speaking of which, exactly. So today, the inspiration for this episode actually came from last week when we were talking about Bailey's. One of the articles that we read talked about how it became popular. Bailey's was sort of helped in the market because of the popularity of something called Advocat at the time. It was kind of a creamy liqueur, and people were trying to sub Bailey's in place in cocktail recipes that called for Advocat. It didn't really work the same. Bailey's would curdle, but I was like, well, you know what? I don't really know much about that other thing they're talking about, this Advocat. I know vaguely that it's somehow related to eggnog or kind of eggnog adjacent. I don't really know much more than that. So I thought we could get into it. It's a seasonal drink. It's a great holiday beverage. Perfect time of year to learn all about Advocat.
And I knew nothing about it. I'd never even heard of it. So it's all new to me.
Well, the outline as far as what is it, it's not exactly a one-to-one with eggnog. So with eggnog, traditionally, you know, you have egg yolks, sugar, cream, and nutmeg along with whatever booze. You can do it non-alcoholic, but you know, traditionally it could be whiskey, it could be brandy, it could be sherry. Now Advocat is similar in that it starts with egg yolks and sugar, sometimes whole eggs and sugar. But instead of getting its thickness from the addition of cream, it's actually put on the stove to sort of thicken up. So you heat the advocaat, and it does not have cream, does not have dairy additionally added to it. And liquor-wise, it is almost exclusively made with brandy. There are some varietals that are made otherwise, but traditionally it is egg yolks, sugar, brandy, heat.
And they all go together to form this creamy concoction.
Wow. And you know, one thing I found interesting is I kind of assumed that people drinking alcoholic eggs like that, somebody had the idea, and every other idea that was that spun off of that first idea. That isn't really the case with advocaat. Advocaat is sort of its own thing that developed independently from things like eggnog or all the sort of things that spin out from eggnog. There are two main stories that are attributed to the origin of advocaat, one of which I think makes more sense chronologically.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes us back to the 1600s in Brazil, around the time of Dutch colonizers. They were coming to Brazil, and well, they were colonizing. They were doing their thing. Not long before their arrival, avocados had made the trip from Central America and Mexico, where they originated. Technically, they originated in Puebla, but they had made their way to the Caribbean, and they were introduced to the indigenous people there. And also of note, as early as like 1620, rum was being distilled around Brazil as well. So we had avocados, we had rum. Now, we've only talked about eggs and sugar and booze. What do avocados have to do with everything? Well, we're gonna get there. But the indigenous people of the Amazon started to mix together sugar, avocado, and rum and make something that they called abacate, which was the Portuguese word for avocado. Now, why were they using a Portuguese word in the Amazon? Well, the Portuguese had beat the Dutch the whole colonizing thing by a few hundred years. So the Portuguese had already been doing the colonizing thing.
Yeah, they'd run around and named a bunch of things already.
Yeah, so you had avocados in Brazil going by their Portuguese name, and this drink using avocados, sugar, and rum was called abacate. And this is the thing that the Dutch encountered.
And the Dutch wanted to have it for themselves.
Yeah. So they came to Brazil around 1654. They really dug the abacate. But then they went back to Europe, and they didn't really have a great way to replicate it because avocados do not grow well in northern European climates, wouldn't you know?
Nor do they travel the ocean well and come there safely.
I could barely get back home from the grocery store with an avocado before it's spoiling. Anyone that I mean, millennials, we know the avocado struggles.
So then they said, well, what do? We don't have any avocados. We want to make this drink. How do we make it? What's something else that's smooth and creamy and tastes like an
yellow
avocado?
Yeah. Something that's got more texture than flavor, high in fat, very creamy. Egg yolks. So.
And now, it's not unusual. I mean, you taught me about putting egg white in a drink and stuff like that. So.
Well, and when we talk about like, this is where I think like, it's not about necessarily ideas developing in a vacuum. Like, I don't think the idea for using eggs in advocaat completely developed in a vacuum. Obviously, you know, centuries before this, people had been putting eggs with booze in drinks. We have posset, which is the predecessor to eggnog. That had been going on for centuries at this point. It wasn't necessarily a new idea, but it doesn't have any direct link up with this. This is definitely a, what do we have that can fill in a drink for the avocado? And, oh, we put egg yolks in drinks. Those are fatty. Those are yellow. Those are rich. Let's do that. So I don't think it's completely, you know, like on their own that these ideas develop. I think they do influence each other, but they do have separate timelines.
They weren't looking to develop their own version of eggnog.
Yeah, exactly.
They were trying to create that drink. And they just said, well, maybe egg yolks would work. And so they tried it, trying to duplicate the missing avocado.
Right. Now, I do think while I was trying to find more history about the abacate, this indigenous drink that was made in the Amazon. There's not a lot about it. There's, you know, I think the lack of evidence, some people point to, like, maybe this is a made up story. Maybe it's not the full truth. But there is a newer product on the market that actually goes by that name. That is abacate, spelled with a Y, or abacate spelled with a Y. And it's distributed. It's by a German company. I think they're based in South Africa. I don't know. None of this lines up with the rainforest, except for that they do donate a decent amount of their proceeds to rainforest preservation. And they are an avocado-based cream liqueur. So they are vegan. You get their creaminess from avocado. They are mixing it with local spirit. They're sweetened. So we do now have an active abacate on the marketplace, if that sounds good to you. It's abacate. You've come across it. I think they also have like a like more of a drier liqueur as well that's avocado flavored, but it does persist.
It also said, which I never knew, it referred to the avocado as the alligator pear tree.
Now, yeah,
why, I don't know, but that was referred to that way in some books from the Brazil or Jamaica.
Yeah, that was the I think it was an Irishman that first coined the name, but It was, yeah, I think you still hear alligator pear, or like translations that are alligator pear today, which is It's a funny, very literal name for it, right?
Yeah,
it's shaped like a pear, but its skin is like an alligator.
It's alligator pear.
All right, so back to the Dutch. Now, the other supposed origin for the name, which kind of, it doesn't really make sense chronologically, because we know people were drinking this thing in the 1600s. This explanation doesn't come for like another two centuries. And that is that advocaat means lawyer to the Dutch. And that drink is sometimes called advocaten borrel, or lawyer's drink. And it was the explanation was like, well, it's the name comes from that. It's what lawyers drink to lubricate their throat so they can speak for long periods of time.
Because a lubricated throat is exactly what you need.
But I don't know, like alcohol and like egg yolks. Is that what makes you?
Yeah, what makes you a good orator?
Maybe. It's hard to say. Like, I think it could be that maybe the word sounds a lot like the word for lawyer, like the word that they imported from Brazil lines up with this word in the native language. And it's like, oh, sounds like lawyer, you know?
Well, I think in claiming their own product, you know, cause they're now substituting the eggs instead of the avocado. So they took the word that sounded like that and just made their own version of it and made it match Dutch, you know, vernacular, so that it would kind of be reasonable to people what it means. And, you know, but I can't imagine you being in court as a lawyer or an advocate saying, "Your Honor, might I have a moment so I can, you know, take lubricate a sip of my throat.
I must drink some egg yolks and brandy before I can
lubricate my throat to speak further."
It's a cool, I like the story. I like the explanation. It's a little silly, but I like it. But in any case, it is in the 1800s when we get this explanation. It kind of makes sense, because this is when advocaat starts becoming really popular. This is when we start seeing it move from like kind of a, you know, a homemade thing to something that is distilled professionally. The first person to do so was a Dutchman by the name of Johannes Kooymans, who was enamored enough by this drink, which also, it was very much at the time like popular sailor's drink, right? Like these people that were going, that had originally gone and like traveled on these ships, these colonizers had spread this idea throughout, like, you know, the sailor community, that this is the thing we drink. So that's really where advocaat first caught on. And then Johannes, he was the one who started experimenting with swapping the base spirit for something that's far more available, which was brandy. And he started distilling his own advocaat in 1828. But many more followed suit afterwards. That's just the first like registered advocaat distillery that we get.
And then they had some that they made put in jars and wide mouth bottles that were thicker so that, you know, you could pour them out and you could, or spoon them out, and they would be put on waffles or pancakes or ice cream, custards, things like that for extra flavoring on there.
Yeah. Well, and that's, and these two styles, they still persist, but this was kind of a delineation between what got exported and what was more enjoyed locally, that you would have this thicker version that was usually made with just exclusively yolks, whereas some, the exported ones would also include the albumin, the egg white. So they'd be a little thinner. They'd be a little runnier. And the runnier ones were more popular on an export market, whereas the thicker ones, the ones you're talking about, were more popular at home, which was this weird middle ground between, is it a dessert like a pudding or is it an alcohol? It's both.
Two things in one.
Well, it's funny because, you know, as much as it's not grow up as like a replica of eggnog, it does mirror the thing that came before eggnog, which was the posset, which was originally like this very thick, like curdled cream with ale, spices, figs, sometimes eggs, and it would often be eaten with a spoon. So this, it is multiple people who have had the idea, wouldn't it be great to get drunk on a pudding cup? Why not? I feel like you'd like that, Dad.
I would, or ice cream. I would like it on ice cream, I think.
Yeah. No, it's
that would be very good. I would eat waffles too with it.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to be prejudiced against waffles.
And there are a lot of like dessert elements and dessert types that kind of spin off from this idea. Cause like nowadays when we say posset, that is like a set cream, like a pudding dessert, you know, like, like Zabaglione, which is like kind of a similar, like you've got wine and cream and eggs and like a setup thing. So you've got a lot more in the culinary dessert field that spin off from this than other boozes. But you do have some other boozes that spin off from this, specifically in like surrounding nations. Like they go by different names, but they're more or less the same thing. Mm-hmm. You have, the air liquor, which is the German, version of Advocat, which translates just to egg liquor. And this is, it got spread to Germany largely because one of the biggest to this day creators of Advocat is the, Verporten company. They started back in 1876, so not long after that first distillery, and they were right on the Dutch-German border. That's where they were located. So they were selling to the Dutch, they were selling to the Germans, and that led to the Germans making it on their own. You also have the Polish that really liked this egg liquor. They took it, they subbed out the brandy, and they put vodka in instead, even though they did call it Eier Cognac or Egg Cognac. It's not cognac. It's vodka. But that is the name still translates to egg cognac, but it's vodka if you're in Poland. And of course, you know, and like as you mentioned, it was consumed a lot on or as a component to desserts. The thinner varieties would be drunk with coffee or served with like some whipped cream and cocoa grated on top, just eaten on its own. But when we get to the cocktailing element, that doesn't happen in its area of origin. That's really when it starts getting exported to like Great Britain. They start mixing with it. Probably one of the best known cocktail to use Advocat is the Snowball.
That's a good Christmas drink, it sounds like, with a name like Snowball.
Snowball. It's very much associated with the 70s, although it was actually invented back in the 40s, the 1940s. Mm-hmm. Although the specifics are not exactly clear. The British started cutting their imported Advocat with a little extra brandy and, of all things, lemonade.
Yep.
That sounds like it wouldn't work. Take this rich, fatty, creamy beverage and just add some lemonade to it. Sparkling lemonade often.
But apparently that's a snowball. There a lot of people say that's a very good drink. And it sounds like something I would like to try.
Well, it does. Well, and it makes sense too, because it was made in the 40s. It really didn't gain popularity until the 70s. And it makes a lot of sense as a 70s cocktail, because we're talking about the era of the creme de menthe, the grasshoppers, the golden Cadillacs, like creamy, rich, heavy drinks were very popular in the 70s. So you can see how Advocat would fit right in, how the Snowball would fit right in.
Well, another catchy name there that they have is the Fluffy Duck.
Yeah, at same time period. Yep.
With the addition of rum.
Well, there were multiple varieties of the Fluffy Duck. There is one with rum. The one that's maybe a little bit more well known is actually another, like a more of like a highball, like a Tom Collins build, and it's actually gin based with orange juice and Cointreau or orange liqueur. So you've got a couple different things that wanted to be called the Fluffy Duck at the time, but still in essence like a rich, you know, creamy, frothy drink. And I mean, this is, you know, for what inspired this episode, this is the same time period where you see Bailey's roll out and people thought, oh, well, if I can put Advocaat in my lemonade, I can put Bailey's in my lemonade. Nope. That's when we learned at Curdle's.
Well, in the Italian ski resorts in the Italian Alps, they put together a drink they called the Bombardino that had brandy and whipped cream mixed in with the Advocaat.
Oh, that sounds great. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of these drinks at the time, like, they sound great. They are definitely on the sweet end. They're definitely dessert drinks. But, you know, I mean, it is basically an alcoholic pudding that is more or less thick depending on what brand you buy. So it makes sense that it would be associated with that.
Well, I was surprised at some of the names because I figured they would just be coming from, you know, things shipped over here from places and we wouldn't be familiar with the names of them, but Bowles and DeCooper, who are have a lot of stuff here, they're two of the ones that distribute this product.
Well, and I think it's in the nation, in the countries that it was originally created in, that it grew popular in, it's still very much a popular beverage. You know, sometimes when we talk about things falling out of favor, we're absolutely looking at it through an American lens, or even just like a American and slightly influenced by like Western European lens. We're not really looking at the world as a whole. And that's what Advocaat is just as much as like other countries don't drink eggnog the way we drink eggnog around the holidays, but eggnog consistently is a thing in America. Every country kind of has their own seasonal creamy or eggy thing around this time of year. And that is, you know, Advocaat is still very much made and loved and rejoiced. But its connection to the cocktail world definitely suffered after that high point of the 70s. You know, with a lot of these cocktails we talked about from the 70s, as we move forward in time, they're not popular anymore. You know, we didn't have really a drinking culture into the 80s, the early 90s. Things that were creamy, things that were rich, just all of that fell out of favor. And it really wasn't until that sort of cocktail renaissance that we've talked about so many times that you see Advocaat making any sort of headway into the cocktail scene in the modern era. There are a couple of like touch points. You know, you mentioned Bowles. Like Bowles had an Advocaat competition in the like early years of the bartending renaissance. It's like, hey, bartenders, you want to make a name for yourself? Make a cocktail with Advocaat. It's a great idea. A lot of people reference Nigella Lawson, of course, you know, on the Food Network, famous cook. That she did a holiday special where she talked, and this was 2007, where she talked about Advocaat and how good it is. And that like caused this massive, like 40% spike in sales, like massive reawakening for the Advocaat international market.
I understand that. Well, I go out and look for things after we do an episode on it.
Yeah. Well, I think now, you know, I don't think anyone's like rung the bell of like, this is the winter that Advocaat returns to like the American marketplace. But I do think that as we're seeing a tendency in popular drinks to, I don't know how else to describe it other than like people are sort of comfortable drinking things that are just purely enjoyable. That like you don't have to drink a cocktail that's like smart and structured and super alcoholic and bitter. Like you can drink something that tastes like liquid pie. It's okay. Does it make you happy? It's fine. And I think that we're seeing that. Like we talked about the espresso martini all the time. Like people like the espresso martini. It's back. You know, people like chocolate martinis are on the return. People are drinking sweeter drinks. They're drinking dessert drinks again. It is a time when I think things like this are seeing a growth in their market.
I had my breakfast pina coladas.
You had your breakfast pina coladas.
Yes. Those are a nice dessert drink too. I poured one over waffles.
I think I think the icy component. I think pouring some like coquito over waffles would be good. Yeah,
that would be.
I don't know. I think the wateriness of a pina colada might not work out. But you know,
soak it up and eat it.
Just like a sponge, delicious. Yeah. A nice soggy waffle. There is one association with Advocaat and kind of the snowball that I think is so, as a horror movie fan, while I was, you know, digging through my research, I came across this and I enjoy this. I don't know. Anybody else that also enjoys horror movies, I think will enjoy this. And this is that there is a cocktail with Advocaat called the Jack Torrance. Now, you know who Jack Torrance is, right, Dad?
From The Shining?
Jack Nicholson's character. Now, if you're if you're a Kubrick fan, I mean, we're talking movie, not book. In the book, Jack Torrance, I believe, sticks exclusively to gin martinis. But in the movie, when Jack Nicholson is having one of those scenes where he's like in the bar in the hotel that is suddenly filled with like people from the 1920s,
right?
Uh-huh. And you know, he's a recovering alcoholic, but he orders a bourbon and he's drinking bourbon in this beautiful bar full of ghosts, and a waiter bumps into him who has three champagne flutes full of Advocaat, and some of it spills on Jack and some of it spills into his bourbon, and he kind of makes a joke of like, I'll take my bourbon and Advocaat. So film geeks have picked up on that and started mixing Advocaat with bourbon to make a cocktail called the Jack Torrance. But people have also thought, like, is that purposeful for Stanley Kubrick at the time? Because this is the kind of cool wraparound. Advocaat was a popular drink, late 1800s, like through the 1920s, fell out of favor, came back into popularity in the 1970s, right? So Jack Torrance, The Shining being made, that was in the 70s, right? Late 70s, early
mm-hmm.
80s?
Mm-hmm.
This is sort of a wraparound where they're serving Advocaat as a touch point of something that would have been popular when these original ghosts were made in the Overlook. And also something that Jack Torrance would recognize. So it's this cyclical nature of the ghost stories being told that Jack's going to be one of the ghosts, you know, like this Advocaat, popular in the 1900s, popular in the 20s, now popular again in the 70s. And even the idea that that cocktail that's best known with Advocaat is called the Snowball. And, you know, depending on which iteration you read, Jack Torrance freezes to death. I don't know how much Kubrick was thinking into this, except for I think he thinks into everything exponentially. So probably he did think about that.
But we're not saying if you drink Advocaat, you will end up a 1920s ghost.
I will drink it if it will mean that. Look at the economy we have to deal with, Dad. That's the only retirement plan I have.
When you're a ghost, you don't have to worry about that.
No, 1920s ghosts, I get a cool suit and a fancy glass for eternity. Sign me up. You
can retire on $100.
I don't have to pay rent anymore. I will do it. Oh, no, I have to spend an eternity drinking from this same beautiful crystal glass in this ballroom. That sounds so bad. So if you're looking for a fun, if you're like me and you're like, yeah, Christmas is great, but I still want to be spooky year round, and you want a Christmas adjacent but also spooky cocktail, make yourself a Jack Torrance, which is Advocaat and bourbon. You could throw a little lemonade in there and make a Jack Torrance after he freezes to death. That's Jack Torrance Snowball.
There you go. Jack Torrance is a snowball.
Wow. I love that. Anytime a cocktail can link up to a horror movie, I just feel like I found something that was meant for me.
Mm-hmm. I was looking forward to learning about this because I like eggnog.
You would like this a lot.
And I like coquito. And so I thought, oh, this is another one that I get to try that's right up there in the same realm.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you can get your hands on a bottle.
Yeah. Well, I'll check at my local market that I go to, and if I can't find it, then I bet I can find it on that site that I order them from.
Yeah, I don't know if you'll find it locally. Maybe. You never know.
I can order that to go with my porn star ingredients.
Just having porn star martinis and snowballs all holiday season. What
Somehow
a what
that
a festive,
sounds related.
You know, don't. It's fine. Sounds delicious. Whatever it means. All right. Well, hey. Any final thoughts on Advocata or the Snowball or anything before we close out, Dad?
Well, I don't know. I don't really like avocados, but I feel like that I would like this drink. So that, I guess that's a real dilemma for me to overcome, but I want to try it anyway.
Well, there's no avocado in the drink.
I know, but it's supposed to taste like that.
No, it's, avocados don't really taste as much as they are texture, I think.
Maybe I'm getting them confused with guac.
Yeah, the guac has a bunch of other stuff in them that makes it taste like guac.
Oh, okay. Well, that might be it. It's
avocados
just,
green, are just creamy and fatty. They don't really taste like anything. They taste like what you put on it.
Tastes like an alligator.
I was looking into, like, what is a vegan alternative to avocado? Is there a vegan avocado recipe? And some people have, like, proposed doing, like, oh, put pudding mixture in it instead of egg yolks. But then I was like, well, wait a second. Why not just do avocados? Just do the thing that it was supposed to be.
They are obtainable now. They learned how to travel and grow in America.
I got the most beautiful avocado at my bodega today. I was just going in for cat food, and then they had – it's one of those places where it's the same avocados every time I walk by, but like 9 days out of 10, they're not ripe enough to buy. And it was the one day where they all were perfect. So you have to buy one of these.
You grab the perfect avocado.
I went – like they all look good, but I was like, no, one of these is going to make me – feel something in my life, and I need to find the one that will.
And then you whipped up a batch of avocado with it.
No, I just put it on. I put it on some toast. Oh no. That's why the stock market's failing. I didn't go out for Black Friday. I bought an avocado.
You bought an avocado for Black Friday.
Yeah. Well, that's all right. It's millennials are already 1920s ghosts.
I didn't buy anything for Black Friday, so you did better than me.
Good for you. All right. Well, thank you, Dad, so much for being here.
Well, thank you, Tay, for having me. I always learn something. It's an interesting listen.
What a pleasure. Thank you all for joining us as well. Thank you specifically to those of you who support us through our Patreon. You're the reason this gets made. If you want to ask us any questions, you can reach out to us at meettheboozecast@gmail.com. If you want to discuss your favorite egg or avocado or cream-based alcohol this time of year, you can do that.
Dessert drinks, waffles to put them on.
Whatever. Ghosts.
Meet the Facebook group page. Wait a minute. That's not right.
Meet the Facebook group page.
The Facebook. The Booze Face
Group. Booze the Face Group Meet page. Go that, do there.
Sounds like we've been drinking too much apricot.
Too much apricot. all right. Well, hey, I've been Taylor Stone.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been.
Tell that there's eggs in there, but it's not green. It would be green if there were avocados in there.
Yeah, that's the only thing. I don't think, like, a green snowball doesn't sound very appetizing.
No. But you know what that sounds less appetizing? A yellow snowball.
I knew what you were going to say.
I was always taught, don't eat the yellow snow.